COVID that the people were worried about, but that wasn't what I had. I was just sick. But I was leading the workshop there, and I met Mark, and he'll tell you about it, but what he may not tell you about it is that he's just got a hell of a story. And I'll warn you, he didn't have a mild case of alcoholism. It's quite a story. But the more than that, when I say active in the AA and NA community up there, we've got it's a small area, so they do AA and NA, and a lot of people wind up doing both fellowships, but he is super active, sponsoring all these people, H&I commitments, speaking before government folks, and his wife is just as active. She has meetings there at the house. He has meetings there at the house, and it's all the time. And it's really impressive to get to watch. But before I run over into his time, I just want to, it's my pleasure to introduce Mark Tucker from Windy Island.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Mark Tucker.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Glad to be here. My sobriety date is December 28th, 2012. This is such, there's a big story about this particular primary purpose group, but I'll finish with that. I'm just going to get right into it. In the spirit of time, I'm going to go right to basically an assessment of the problem. And then I'll go into, the solution and then a plan of action. Mm-hmm. So I'll just sprinkle you with a couple stories at first. So this is how my drinking started out. I'm 14 years old. I moved to Tacoma, Washington. And my dad is an alcoholic. My brother, so here, real quick, Mary Lynn, Mike, Matt, Megan, Molly, Marshall, Miles, Madeline, Malia, Mariana. Those are all. Well, the last two are my daughters, but the rest are all my siblings. So I have nine of those siblings, and we all start with M, so it gets a little confusing sometimes. My dad was a Korean War vet, 1st Division Marine, and fought in Korea in 1951 and 1952, and he came back kind of with that same attitude, and so that's kind of how he raised the family. So by the time I was 14, I was like, I gotta get out of here. So I'm living with my mom, and my mom subsequently went blind when I was 2 years old. So she's blind. I'm already, by 14, I'm full tilt with all of this stuff. But believe it or not, I didn't stop at just alcohol. I kind of did some more research beyond that. And so I moved in with my mom. Again, she's blind, so I took full advantage of that. I moved in with my other brother, who is from my mom's side. So he's an Allen, which is an anomaly in our family. And so I'm only there about 2 weeks. And I wore my Metallica shirt to school that day because that I believe that I'm an equivalent of which I think about. So what I think about, I attract into my life. And that day I attracted all of that into my life. And within a week, me and my other buddy had drank a fifth of vodka and chased it with Mad Dog grape. Winning combination, I can tell you. But we drank it so fast that I was like, I don't even feel anything. Then next thing you know, we're kicking in my friend's door to get some other stuff. And I took the VCR, and I'm out front of the house, and his parents were sitting across the street playing bridge. And witnessed the whole thing, and I don't even know what's going on anymore. And I'm just walking out through the VCR, and I get this, like, this is what I saw. I'm not sure what really happened, because as an alcoholic, I've been an eyewitness to 1,000 things that never happened. This is what I remember, that I just saw two sets of legs, like a Bruce Lee movie, and just right inside of the face, and dropped the VCR, and I got beat up pretty bad. And then the cops came, and by this time, now the alcohol is really kicking in, so now I'm going violent, and so the cops come, and I'm a spitter. I was spitting, and I was punching, and I and I get beat up again. So they found it necessary to hog tie me so that my ankles are hog tied to my wrists. And they picked me up this way with the spit guard on, and I'm still going after them. And so then I get to the jail, and they strap me to the ACT-RIGHT chair. And he's in his big black chair. And so that's how it started. That's just a real quick one. That's how it started. And then I'm just going to go 20 years later. I'm going to go to that one. So this is the assessment of the problem. So we're getting a clear-cut vision of the problem. So I'm going to tell you about the first time I went to prison. So the first time I went to prison, I had met a gentleman. He offered me $1,500 to give him a ride to Arkansas, and that trip didn't work out very well either. And I was not, so this is the reason I'm telling you this, is because this is where I was in my alcoholism and addiction. I lived under the Burnside Bridge at a cardboard condominium. Here's the tricky part of the disease. Now watch this, because it'll come back to us, is that I'm living under the bridge. I've constructed this pretty nice condominium out of cardboard, and at hibachi clothes, you know, I'm king of the block. I'm selling watches and chains, and I'm a hustler. I love the streets, remember? And I was just out there like that, and I look over at Tom, and he's only got a sleep bag sleeping on the floor. And I'm like, what a loser. What a loser. Can you believe this guy doesn't even have a... I'm over here grilling hot dogs. And... So that's just sick, out of my mind, sick. So I'm in the hospital. I have cellulitis from outside issues. I'm about to lose my leg. It's, you know, borderline necrofasciitis, which is a flesh eating disease. I wasn't clean, and I wasn't really doing the right thing out there. And he offered me this $1,500, which sounded like a million to me. I was like, I would probably have done it for $100. But he wanted me to get ride all the way to Arkansas from Oregon. I was like, let's go. And so by this time, my veins, there's no more of those. And the surgeon had to come in and put an IV in me and get the antibiotic down into my heart, because I had no other source to get it to. And this gentleman offered me that, and I pulled this out of my neck. And my girlfriend is sitting there and watching all of this. She's lost her whole mind. She doesn't know quite, because I've only been seeing her for about 6 months, so she doesn't know quite the level of sickness that we're talking about. And so there's blood all, I mean, it's, and I just clamp him off and get in the wheelchair, and I'm, we're going, we're out of here. And the doctor comes running down the hallway. He goes, if you leave, you're probably gonna lose your leg. And this is my comment: I have another one. I mean, that's where I was at. And I can bring that to the book on page 8, where it says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair in that bitter morass of self-pity and quicksand stretched around me in all directions. Everywhere I stepped, I just felt like the world was just going to crumble in on me. I was so lonely, even though I had all these friends and whatever. But I took that trip and it didn't work out very well. And he ended up killing himself in my car and a couple other people. And I ended up doing 60 months for rendering criminal assistance in a homicide. And so I go to prison. I'm like, phew, whoa. And he was in the Mexican Mafia. He was the fifth most wanted man in America. And I don't even know why I'm saying that. I usually don't even tell this from the podium, but this is just where it's going. And I'm the one that told on the guy, now I'm in prison, so I have this particular gang looking for me. And I went to this gang, because in prison it's a little different than it is out here, if you can imagine that. And so I just went and took care of it, and I said, yes, I'm the one that did it. They gave me a pass. I did my 60 months without too much shenanigans. And so I get out, and now, this part is kind of 63, 62. It's this delusion that I could get satisfaction out of this life if I could only manage well. It's on page 62, third paragraph down. But that's what I thought I could do. And so I get out with all of the vigor and thirst and hunger to live and show everybody, man, that was just a isolated incident. I'm not going to do that again, you know? And so I get out, And I got an accountability buddy. That's how I'm going to do it. All I need is accountability buddy. We're not going to drink, right? No drugs, no alcohol. Just we're going to work out. So I joined the gym. I got an LA Fitness membership. We're over here eating smoothies and drinking healthy stuff. And we're just going hard in the paint. I got a good job. You know, I've been out about 2 weeks. And there's this Bukush blinking sign across the street. It's the Cloverleaf Tavern on 6th Avenue. I said, we should try a pizza. You know, let's go over there. So we go to the bar. Mistake number one. I'd already relapsed way back here, though. The plane doesn't crash. There were some bolts loose. There were some things that weren't being done. So we go into the bar. As soon as I open that door, that smell of stale liquor and the conversations from the tables. Just, I love it. You know? And the shitty perfume. I love, whatever, man. I'm home. And so it's that trigger. Now, from the doctor's opinion, you know, XVII says to give me another, you know, assessment of the problem. And then, you know, when we make that transition from page 23 to 24, we're no longer talking about what alcohol does when it's in my body. We're talking about the obsession. The top page 23, then we turn it over. So this is what happened to me. The obsession had started way back here, and I came in, and all these smells and the stuff. And so we're each looking at each other because the consequences of drinking or getting high are full contact punch. You know, we're from prison, and that's just what we do. You get punched in the face as hard as I can if you do that. So, and he's big, and I was pretty big at the time. I just gotten out for my first time. I was 190, you know, whatever. I wouldn't want to get punched by this guy, and I didn't think he wanted to get punched by me. So anyway, we talk ourselves into it. I'm going to let him order it. You know, if you're thirsty, I mean, if you didn't want his Pepsi, the Coors Light doesn't even really count. Who drinks Coors Light anyway? That shit doesn't count. So we end up ordering the pitcher, and as soon as the alcohol touched my lips, whoo, because I never stopped. It's just alcohol. It's never enough. So I'm living at a clean and sober house, got the best job in the world. I just got the car. Everything's going great. And I get back to my clean and sober house, and here comes the disease. I'm by myself. I lack the tools. I only have self-will. And I'm pacing back and forth. I got 6 roommates. I'm like, you're such a loser. Remember the negative self-talk? You're going to invite, what are you going to do? Invite some girl over with your 8 roommates? You know, what are you going to do? Put a little sock on the door and be like, hey guys, we're busy in here. You know, it's just like, you're, I don't know how, I was 37 or something like that. And so the mind is just kicking my ass. And so, and I have this phone with numbers on. I call the guy. I call Kevin. And I go, hey, bro, just get out of yourself. You're right over. All right, boom. And here we go again. Stayed up all night, did all the stuff, go to work the next day, get fired. Kind of. I'm on DOC. It's a whole other story. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about dysfunctional relationships because I go right into those too because that's part of it. You know, it's part of this delusion that, well, she'll save me. And I'm so addicted to suffering. Every decision that I make leads to some type of suffering. And it's all masked as self-pity. Like, well, whatever decision I make is going to be the worst one. Watch this. That's not my intention. My intention is to show the world that, look at me. I think I look at my new car that I have. Isn't it cool? And look at my pretty girlfriend. Shit, don't know. And so I'm on the run. I do my first violation for a dirty UA. And they're like, okay, next time, you know, you're gonna be in big trouble. So I lose the job, but I'm so ambitious. I've always been ambitious on the streets, and I've always hustled. I'm getting something today. And so I started delivering phone books. I'm delivering phone books. I got this sports car, and my car is just, you know, I gotta get rid of these phone books. The more you get rid of, the more money you get. I'm getting rid of these phone books, and I meet this girl. She's, you know, it was like Dukes of Hazzard. She had the hood popped open, and she's down in there wrenching. I'm like, oh, hell no. I just, you know, she definitely needs a phone book. So I go, and I introduce myself and give her a free phone book. It's free phone book day for you. And she turned around, and she got, you know, she fell in the tackle box type of deal. And purple hair, I love that shit. And we chopped it up or whatever. I got the number. And I'm still living in the cleanest sober house on a thread, right? I got, you know, 3 strikes, you're out of her. And so she got 5 kids. I promise you, she got 5 kids. They're running all over the place. She has a large methamphetamine habit, and I'm probably 6 psych meds. That is so perfect. You put the cape on and you shh, I'm gonna save this one.
Sure.
But remember what I said, I attract the equivalent of which I express. What's going on in my mind? Negative self-talk, negative this, I'm a piece of doodle and all that stuff. That's what's going on, so that's what I'm attracting in my life. And then I'm left at the end of the day going, why is this happening to me? Oh my God. Anyway, so I went to prison 3 more times. I'm just trying to speed this up. 3 more times behind this dysfunctional relationship, what I thought, how I thought that I could manage my life was to put her in it and put this in it and try to dodge this and do that and do all these separate things, you know, that I thought was going to work. It's the toolkit of self-will. When it fails, you'll reach for anything. You reach for it all. And so the first time, the first story I told you, to the last story, I got out of prison the third time. I was out 3 weeks and caught another case with her in the car. We get pulled over. We're at a casino at 3 o'clock in the morning. We get pulled over. Isn't that weird? we're in a truck with like washer and dryers, you know, hoses and shit dragging. You know what kind of people those are, right? And right there in the, I'm sitting in the middle with my, I look like this. I'm, because I'm hungry, looking for a job, right? But I called her because I needed some attention. I need some attention. And then watch this. Look how the ego and the disease will lord myself over you. Look at you. You're all messed up on this stuff. You could see her flailing from the satellite. She got lasers shooting out of her frame. And I'm sitting in the middle, and this guy is doing the same thing. I'm like, we're all going to hell for sure. This is the road to hell. So we get pulled over. She's very violent and very toxic, and she started just yelling at the cop. I'm like, this is going to go great. So we all get yarded out of the car. I'm like, look, officer, this is my DOC paperwork. I just got out. I don't know what's happening. So, I'm just looking for a ride home. So they search the truck, and they find some of the business. I'm the only felon. So I get cuffed up, and she's like, isn't that your backpack? I'm like, no, it's not my backpack. And she, whatever, man. Okay. Anyway, so I go back, but this time I was so much self-hatred. Remember the self-hatred? That I wanted to kill myself. I could no longer take it for one more second. My own skin, my own, all the decisions that I had made. And so I ended up just like I did when I was 14 in that spit garden in the act right chair. I ended up there in a green schmock naked licking windows. That's how much self-hatred I had. If they would have let me kill myself, I would have given it a good shot, you know? And that's how it kind of all ended. And so from that point on, I go back to prison. There's a whole, whew, lots of stuff, but we're going to keep it to a minute. I go to prison, the one I just left, and as soon as the door slammed behind me, you guys remember saying, remember that just, anyway, I hit my knees. Well, after I looked under the bed to make sure nobody's looking. Look out the window. I don't see nobody having me in here on my knees praying. But I hit my knees. I'm like, it's over. I'll either kill myself or change. And that night when we were out, go out to the day room, I saw the call out for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, I'm going. I'm going. Because every time I get out of prison, I take the $30 gate money. I go to AMPM. I get 2 4 Locos. I drink those in the bathroom. I go to the casino and I end up downtown. And I don't know what happened. I didn't report every time. Those are never my intentions. My intentions were like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to the island and I'm gonna get this, you know, all the right stuff. Probably go to a meeting maybe. That's what they said to me, you know. So they talk about these meetings. I'm like, oh, you have to go to meetings and read a little book. Yeah, that's not gonna work for you. You don't know who I am. You don't know Burnside Bridge, you know? It's not gonna, oh, this is gonna save my life? Come on, man. Yeah. Anyway, so I started going to these meetings. I started going to these meetings like in a position of surrender. Like, this is the last house on the block. There's no referrals from here. If you're here, AA is not going to be like, oh, we should refer you over here to that, you know, you know, it's over. This is it. You know, so I started going to these meetings and I was like, look, an alcoholic properly armed with facts about themselves could be a lethal weapon in recovery. And so as I'm going to these meetings, I'm talking to these gentlemen that driving for free, coming into the, you know, and doing all the stuff, you know, 3-4 times a week. I'm like, wow. I go, look, will you come and pick me up the day I get out of prison? I can't handle it, I guess. You know, Stevie Wonder could see I couldn't handle it. That was never my intention, though. Remember, I just went to the bar for one. And you just thought you changed your mind, but you close the bar down and you end up in a spit bar. You know, like, what happened there? Anyway, so they said they agreed. I go, oh, that's so cool. I got everybody's number. You know, I'm like, I'm in it. And so I was time to go, Mark. Roll it up. I'm like, oh, thank God. And so I get dressed, and the state patrol comes in. He goes, are you Tucker? I'm like, yep. He goes, you're under arrest. I'm like, whoa, what? But watch this. I had been going to meetings long enough where I just told him, oh, it's perfect. You think he can get me to court by noon so I don't have to stay in the county jail? He's like, wow, your chicken's really good. I'm like, yeah, I don't know why either, but let's go. So I take the other clothes off. I don't know whose clothes those were, but I put the orange jumpsuit on, and then I go to do the thing at county jail, and they let me out on a Monday. So now I have everybody's numbers in my little jail pocket that they give me there, and I just peeled off. I'm so happy to get out, and I threw it in the thing, and they shut the doors. Later, Tucker, open it. We'll see you next time. And they shut the door. And I got my brown paper bag with my DOC number blasted across the front with everything in my, you know, possession in this brown paper bag. I don't even know, you know, the paperwork from prison. Whatever. I don't even know what it said. So I'm like, oh, I forgot the number. So I'm banging on the door like, Tucker, get out. You know, they go on the little, I said, get out of here, Tucker. You're not getting back in. So I'm literally running. This is my hometown. I'm downtown Tacoma, and I'm seeing out of my peripherals my old life, all the little moves in the alley and stuff. And I run up to the 12 and 12, and I go in there and I sit down. They're like, oh, fresh out. I'm like, oh, yeah. Because I got the shoes and the stuff. Anyway, so I call my brother. He comes and picks me up, drives me to Olympia, Washington, where I've never been. Well, I've been there, but I've never lived there. So I get there, and I call Brian. I got a hold of Brian, who was the guy that brought the message into the meeting. He came and he picked me up and he brought me to my first meeting, and I'm walking up this ramp. This is my first day out, less than 24 hours. I'm walking up the ramp to this men's meeting, and I'm greeted by these, you know, all these greeters in my coat, and my mind's trying to kill me, like, oh, wow, look at this dude's shirt. And, oh, great. We're going to go sit in here with these losers, these power legs. I'm like, oh. But I just kept, each step I took was pushing through the fear of the unknown. And I went up there, and I shook people's hands, and my buddy Brian, he goes, you're going to get a sponsor tonight. I'm like, okay. So after the meeting, I just beelined it over this cat, tattoos and some steel toe boots. I'm like, hey, bro, so will you be my sponsor? He goes, sure. And so I didn't give it a lot of thought. I don't care. He didn't even say anything. He just looked like he knew some stuff. So that's where I was at. And, you know, I don't care. At this point, whatever you guys want me to do, that's what I'm doing. And so he's like, oh, we're going out to dinner. You want to come? I'm like, ooh. God. I don't have money. You know, I don't have anything. I have zero. That's such a perfect story. I have nothing. These aren't my clothes. You know, nothing. I got here with him. All the stuff. I'm 40 years old. You know, I'm just shining my whole life. You know, all scorecards. Red through, you know, here's Mark Tucker's performance of life. You know, just 40 years and just all the scorecards are zero. Zero. You're like, can I get a one? No. So I go to dinner with these gentlemen, and I've already, you know, you have a judge. I know none of you guys judge, but up in Washington, there's people that judge. And I'm judging these guys because I'm just judging them. And because I'm outside my comfort zone, which what I found is the only place that I can really grow is outside my comfort zone. And so I go out to dinner, and I meet the most amazing people, revolutionized my life. I got through another 24 hours without having to take a drink. You know, these guys have been to the federal penitentiary and all this stuff. And after I'd already judged, I'm like, oh, damn, I didn't know that. And, you know, because that's what I think is cool, not your little polo shirt or whatever. Anyway, so they're like, hey, so I immediately start working the steps. I'm living at my brother. This is the scene. This is in my house. My brother allowed me to stay at his house. This is the same brother I moved in with in Tacoma with my mom. He goes, you can stay here, man. One contact of Bambi. Bambi's the with the laser beams and shit. Addicted to suffering, addicted to the, remember the stuff and whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, never. who would call her? Watch this. This is day two. Day two, I'm out. I'm trying to do the right thing. You know, I'm so grateful that my brother let me stay. Day two, I'm at my brother's store. It's all glass. It's a furniture store. And I'm like, oh, so happy that you're here. I'm still nervous from being out. I'm sure some of you guys can relate. After you do a long stretch, you're a little nervous. There's cars and trees and people and all that stuff. And so I'm like, okay, bro, I'm going to check out the bus system. I don't want to be a burden on you. I don't have any, you know, I'm going to go take the bus. He's like, okay, you know, good luck. So it's raining, which is weird in Washington, but it's raining. And, oh, God, this is a good one. But so I'm walking across the street. It's raining, and I hear Ellen say, but she said, hey, Mark. I'm like, that is not. Nope. And I'm in the middle of the crosswalk. And she said, I know you hear you, mother. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, that can only be one person on the whole planet. And then I turn around, and there she is in this, you know, gray Cutlass with the curb finders and shit on. And I'm paralyzed in the middle of the crosswalk. I'm like, how? How on earth? Out of all the streets in the whole Washington state, how is she? I'm in two cities away, like 100 miles away from where we used to hang out, and there she is. And I'm freaking out. I feel like if anybody's ever experienced crack, that you take a hit, that I'm frozen, paralyzed in the middle of the crosswalk. So I'm like a robot. People are like, honk, honk. I'm like, oh. I go over to her. I'm like, hey, what's up? She's like, hey, get in the car. I'm like, no. I can't get in the car. If I get in the car, you know, but I'm so stressed out, folks, so stressed out. And it's pouring down rain. She says, it's pouring down rain. Get in the car. I'll give you a ride home. I'm like, oh, no. What? You cannot know where I live or any of that. And, this is 10 seconds. I'm gonna go to Aunt, because what I associate her with is alcohol. And before she woke up at 7 in the morning, I'd already have to go to the store at 6 when they first opened and get 2 Four Locos and drink them on the way home before she woke up to be able to handle what was going on at that house. Real quick one. Her mom, we're living in a trailer, single wide, and her mom breeds chihuahuas. I promise you there is 20 chihuahuas. And we sleep in the back room. And I'm still holding on to this job, and I have to be there at 6 in the morning. Whew. And I get up, and it's just piranha building. And I'm trying to step over chihuahua. And I'm trying not to wake everybody up, and you step in a hot one with no shoes or socks. Right through the toes, I'm like, oh, boy. Remember the suffering? The suffering. I was just more self-pity for me, right? And I tell people about the poop and all this stuff. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. They're like, why don't you just leave? I'm like, shh. You know? Come save it. We're actually going to get married. I asked your mom. I go, what do you think about us getting married? And she goes, you're the dumbest person I've ever met. Her mom for me. Anyway, fast forward. So here's the thought in my head as I'm leaning in her car. She says, you know, get in the car. I'm like, no. But in my mind, I'm like, well, I could get a little piece, but I have to get buzz. I can't just do that on the match. And so all those thoughts were going in my head. 1 Four Loco, give me a ride home, drop me off far away, right? No one will ever know. That was my first thought. First thought is that. My second thought is my brother's probably watching me right now because the whole store is glass. And I'm only one block away. And so this is what I did. I just broke. I just broke like dog the bounty hunter. She's like, whoa. I just took off running. That was the only, because I didn't have any words. I didn't want to stick, because I know myself, if I waited there too long, she would talk me into the car and all this stuff. And it would have been, my life would have been over right there. So I just broke on her. And I ran, and I did a full loop around the store, my brother's store. And, you know, I'm peeking. Oh, God, it feels like I'm being chased by the police, right? That's how I felt. And I peek in I go in my brother's store, and I'm like, he's like, bro, what's wrong? I'm like, shit, da. You know, I go, because how do you explain to him, how does this person be in this crosswalk? Out of all the thousands of streets, there she is. My whole mind is blown, and so I just went and I told him the truth. So that's my first introduction to honesty. I told him the truth. Because I could have just kept running and not told anybody anything. But this is where I start to see the change. is that I went into my brother and I said, look, man, this is what happened. I'm walking across. I told him the whole story, what I just told you. And he's like, where's she? Because he, everybody knows them. He's like, where's she at? Nobody knows. Down. She is no joke. But anyway, so he goes, I'll call my wife and she'll come and pick you up. I'm like, and I'm still hyperventilating. He's like, just have a seat. You know, it's a furniture store. He's like, pick a bed or something. So I go back home, blah, blah, blah. And, but at that dinner, they said, you should come to this, you know, now I'm in service. This has been 2 weeks. My brother's house, I'm living in his son's room, who's nine. So I'm sleeping on this Spider-Man bed with the Spider-Man pillow. My feet are hanging over the edge. How old am I? I'm 39. 39 years old. Oh, you made it. You know, it's Spider-Man. But I didn't care, and I didn't have a vehicle, and I didn't want to ask them for anything. I thought, can I borrow your bike? You know, his son's bike. And I started going to meetings. I went to As Bill Sees It at 7 a.m., and I just plug in my earphones, and I just ride in the rain, ride. And then I just stay down there, go to coffee with somebody, to the nooner, and then I went to my home group, which is the primary purpose group in Olympia. I'll get further into that. So I started to do that, and I did that every single day. I went through all my steps within 30 days. That's all I did. All I did was eat through these steps. And I didn't just half-ass them. This isn't mediocre. And I continued to do that. My sponsor was like, you need to be of service. I go, okay, great, what do I do? So I get the keys to the kingdom of this huge church at the men's meeting. I'm like, oh, no, you're going too fast. There's 200 people at this meeting. I'm not, no way. He's like, you got to do it. I'm like, okay, so I do it. That's my first service position. They're like, my sponsor's like, we're going to do this boogie bash. I'm like, boogie bash? Wow. Yeah, because remember when you first start, you're like, this is kind of dumb. This is what we're doing. And so I go to this boogie bash, and my brother drops me off. It's like I'm getting dropped off at that seventh grade dance. Remember how you're like, yeah. Oh my God, dance with and all that. And so I'm pacing a little bit, and I go in. And there's like a 17-year-old girl and 80-year-old man sitting there. I'm like, oh boy. Whew, this is a tough crowd. I'm like, what? Hey guys, so yeah, I'm Mark. I'm, you know, Shuggy McDoodles, my sponsor. And what do I do? Oh, you're gonna put up streamers, so glad you're here. I'm like, wow. And they hand me this box of pink streamers. I was like, nope. Hey, I gotta go for a minute. I gotta be right back. My whole mind was blown that I'm in, because my partners from the joint saw me right now, I just get beat up. You're getting beat up for some pink streamer, you know, all this stuff. So I went out to the parking lot, I'm pacing back and forth. This is the only time I've really been super thirsty. I was like, this is stressful, like putting up streamers and 17-year-old girl. I'm like, what did you do? You know, what did you do to get in here, you know? And that was my mentality back then, right? Just give me a break because I was a newcomer. But so I watched The Power of the Fellowship. I had the phone list, stupid phone list, right? Who's gonna call off that? Watch this, so I used the phone list. So I call my sponsor first, right? I go, if my sponsor doesn't answer, obviously Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you know, you guys said the thing works. If I'm in trouble, to call my sponsor. Yeah. Well, in the Mayflower, when Bill calls his sponsor, Evie, he get hold of it. So I knew I had to have a backup plan. And so I called the next person on the list. This guy only had 24 hours sober. I had seen him in a meeting before. I could tell by your demeanor and the look in your eyes when you've been up all night, you woke up with her, and you're very, you're a low spot. He goes, wow, how'd you know? I'm like, I've seen the movie before. And so I call him, and he comes to this event and picks, we walk in arm to arm into this event, you know, because now I've got a road dog, right? And I've met the most amazing people. I pushed through the fear. I pushed through the fear, and I met these people, and now, you know, I'm serving Red Bulls and coffees and we're dancing and I'm like, this is kind of cool. You know, it's kind of cool. It's not totally cool, but it's kind of cool. And so they invite me to a men's retreat, you want to go to a spiritual retreat? I'm like, wow, I should kill myself now. We're talking about boogie bashes and streamers and now we're going all the way with the spiritual retreat, right? So I go there. And again, I'm on the BMX, just plugged in, 4 years old, not quite yet. And this is what I do every day, three meetings every single day, and I'm going hard in the paint, and I do all this stuff. And I go to this men's retreat, and I push through the fear again. I'm like, oh, let's try it. I'm just going to do it all. Because out there, I was not a mediocre alcoholic. You know what I mean? I just do it all until we get arrested. Sounds like a great plan. And so I go to this retreat, and I promise you, it's on this beautiful lake. I mean, it's like Lord of the Rings. There's mist coming off. I was just waiting to see the Loch Ness Monster go by. Wow, this is crazy. And it's like this outdoor cathedral type thing carved into the side of the mountain. And I do my first meditation, and I promise you, just a bald eagle. Just, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, what the hell is happening right now? Like, I gave it this, I was became so willing, and these things start to happen in front of your eyes that, wow. And so that happened. And so this whole time, I'm doing my gratitude list. And from about the third day that I got out, I was hit to this gratitude list, and I started doing my constructive review. But then I ended my evening with my accomplishments, because I have a negative mind up there. So at the end of my constructive review, I say, because my mind will be like, you didn't do shit today. What did you do, you loser? I'm like, well, actually, I worked out, I prayed, I meditated, I made the bed. And I promise you, watch this, that I got here today by all the things I said no to. Hey, Mark, you want to come hang out? Hey, no. Hey, you want to come meet Tammy? No, what? No, I'm not doing any of that. And I started to make the bed. That's all I, because before when I get out of prison, I'm like, I got $10,000 over here I owe. I got this, I got to get a job, I got to get a car, I got to get this. This time I didn't do any, I just didn't do anything. I didn't try to get any money. I didn't try to get a car. I didn't try to do anything but this. And just started making the bed. And then I went on to pray, and then I meditated, and then I went to as Bill season. I mastered the mundane things in life. Once I can master those mundane things, then I can start to juggle another ball. You know, if I'm just juggling one, I'm like, doo-doo-doo, you know, and get a hang of the one ball, and then I can start to juggle a couple more. And so I go to the men's retreat, I start to do this gratitude list, and then my buddy throws me this one. He goes, why don't you start being grateful for all the adversity that's in your life? I'm like, what? Yeah, like DOC coming to your house twice a week, like you having to go outpatient 3 times a week for 3 hours a night, and for that DUI that's hanging over your head that you got to go to court for next month. I'm like, okay. So I started doing that. I got me a little gratitude. I don't know. Whatever, man. I just got a little gratitude rock. This is my gratitude rock. Put it in my pocket, and I started doing the stuff. I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for the judge. I'm grateful for not having my license. All the stuff, right? So I go to court. It's time to go to court. Don't have a car, so I just ask somebody from the program, hey, will you give me a ride? Sure, I'll give you a ride. So I go to the court, and this is Hilltop in Tacoma, which is a pretty rowdy place, right? And I'm dressed like this, and everybody is not. And everybody else is not. You know, everybody's ganged out, you know, Chris, blood, and all stuff. So everybody's looking at me like I'm a lawyer or something. I'm like, ooh. And so I get in front of the judge, and the judge sits down, and he looks at me, he looks at my computer. This is 30 seconds of silence in the courtroom. It's a long time. And he goes, Mr. Tucker, I was expecting to see somebody in their late 60s with the amount of convictions that you have. I was like, that's not a good opener. And, but watch this, the mindset, the quality of my thinking, watch this, the quality of my thinking will dictate the quality of my experience with you. If my thinking is clear to wrong motives, then things might turn out. And if they don't turn out the way I want them to, I'm not going to freak out. You know, I have some tools now. And so the judge, he looks at me, he goes, Mr. Tucker, I'd like you to turn around and address the court and tell the court how you, of all people, changed your life around. I'm like, oh, what? I'm like, wait, serious? And everybody in the courtroom's like this. Me too. I'm like, okay. So I turned around and I addressed the court, and I told him about Alcoholics Anonymous, how it changed my life, how it saved my life. And he goes, well, go ahead and spin it, walk around, and I'm going to go ahead and drop the DUI. I'm going to take all these other little infractions that you've accumulated off, and I want you to go get your license today. Mm. That's what he told me. I was like, that's the power of the triangle. And when I put God in the middle of the triangle, and I don't worry about the results, which I have no control over the results, but if I can focus and control my efforts into the present moment, which is the only moment that I have dominion over, and focus on that action part, remember, assessment of the problem, understanding of the solution, and a plan of action. It's that simple recipe that got me that far. And so from that day, I went and got my license. The next day, I go to my outpatient, which I'd only been going to for 4 weeks, which is an 18-week program. I go there, and she goes, "Mr. Tucker, I'd like to see you in my office." I'm like, "Oh, God." So I go into her office, and she says, "Mr. Tucker, there's nothing we can teach you here." I'm like, "What?" She goes, "You're out of here." I go, "What do you mean?" "And what's going on?" She says, "I'm graduating you today." I'm like, "What?" I go, "Does my DOC officer know about this?" She goes, "Yes, she does. She's the one that recommended it with my cosign." I was like, "Wow." She goes, because the week before I was up there teaching stuff on the whiteboard, she goes, "Why don't you tell her what you're doing?" And I was just telling her about what I was doing with you guys, what you guys were teaching me. Anyway, so I got graduated, you know, 14 weeks early. As a byproduct of working this program and just implementing these spiritual principles that are associated with each one of our steps, each one of our traditions, each one of our concepts, that's a lot of spiritual principles. And so I started to do that, and I gave it 1 year. So I lived in Olympia for 1 year. I got out of prison April 1st, and I moved out of Olympia April 2nd, and I moved to Whidbey Island. And what I want to say about the primary purpose group is that my home group was the primary purpose group from a gentleman that used to come to this group. And he brought your workbook and the big book up there and started another meeting. And that guy Brian I was telling you about that picked me up from prison, he's like, "Oh, this is my home group. You got to check this out." I'm like, "Okay," because I'm checking it all out. And we go through the big book line by line, you know, and we read from this workbook, and this is how we get through it. So that's how I'm very proficient in the big book, on every single page. And the primary purpose group, so that was 10 years ago. And now, 10 years later, I'm at the primary purpose group. God is such a mastermind. It's so, I get chills that Charlie Parker's in my life, and all the guys that Charlie has touched are all a part of my life too, and all the people that picked me up from the airport, Zane, and the time I got to spend with Stephen. My life is so abundant, it doesn't make sense. This program is not logical, so please don't try to figure it out. It's, you know, why does the sun come up over there? I'm not sure. I don't sign up for the class. I just enjoy the sun. It's much simpler when I don't complicate it. You know, and so I really like page 152 where it says, "Do you have a sufficient substance? You have a sufficient substitute for the obsession of the mind." And it says that they do. And it's found here in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that this program has allowed me to walk with my dad hand in hand. Real quick, I'm going to wrap it up. On the amends process, 3 weeks out, I'm on step 9. And I asked my sponsor if he'll come with me to do all my amends. So just like Bob, after that surgery, on June 10th, 1935, June 11th, 1935, he left that surgery and he went and did all his amends that night. Came home late. People were wondering if he got loaded again. But he had really done the right thing. And he went and cleaned it all up. So I was like, "Well, I'm going to do that too." So I made the list and all the stuff. And me and my sponsor went over it all. You know, guided amends. I just go out there. I went out there with some guidance. I go, "Look, I have Bambi on this. You need to be present, because I'm not to be trusted. She's definitely not to be trusted." And that was my second one, because she was in Olympia, and that was a whole other story of why she was in that intersection. I won't get into that, but it's a crazy story, too. But I went and did my amends. I started with my brother and his wife and made it to Bambi, and she's like, "Well, why don't we just do your DNA in my house?" I'm like, "No, man, I still..." Remember, because alcohol, properly armed, facts about himself, can be a lethal weapon in recovery. And so I brought him with me. My sponsor's right here. I can't. "Nope, we're not doing that." I laid it out for him. I said, "Okay, well, gotta go." And I left him. And I went all up the whole I-5 corridor until I ended on Whidbey Island with my dad, who I brought a serial killer to their house. I was not allowed there for years. But this is almost 10 years later now. And my stepmom, her whole, I mean, she's still living fear from what happened. But my dad allowed me to come with my sponsor. And my dad goes, "Oh, you're going to make an amends." Right. And so I've been writing my dad and my family letters from prison my whole life. And he goes, "Just set me, Mark, hold on real quick. Great, great talk you're doing." And he comes back and he's got a shoebox full of letters. He goes, "You know what's in here?" I go, No. Shoes? Nope. He goes, these are all letters from you from prison. And he opened them up, and he goes, you can take these letters and your amends and shove them in your ass. But that's what he said. I go, yeah, that's just my dad. You know, he's just a Marine. But here's what Alcoholics Anonymous provided me with this time. Time is so short, it's so valuable. We're only given a few sunsets, a couple seasons, and it's over. And so I really didn't want to, you know, sitting in prison when my dad went through triple bypass surgery, who wants to be the selfish, self-centered person that's in prison when his dad passes away? Anyway, so I got the opportunity to walk with my dad shoulder to shoulder for 2 years. He's 81 and 82 years old, but I got to work with him. And he got to see my amends, because the words, that doesn't matter. It sounds great, great speech, you know, very noble of you to make your amends, you know? But to be able to live it and tell the truth, be honest, which is foreign to me. I'm not a truth teller. I don't like to tell the truth because it's going to sting a little bit and I might be shunned. And so being honest with my father was a difficult thing for him because his hands are as big as this podium is what I see. Just and he was diagnosed with cancer and I got to walk him all the way to the finish line as a direct result of this program and the spiritual principles associated with them and just all the way to the last breath. And then I have this perfect contrast with my brother who's totally drunk, totally loaded, freaks out, leaves me and my older brother to deal with the aftermath of what happened. And Alcoholics Anonymous provided me with that time. I've made my amends, and when he finally did take his last breath, there was nothing left to say. Isn't that cool? But here's the time that I cried. When my sister Molly called me from treatment, because most of us Tuckers are not a portrait of perfection. We all have a little bit of a checkered path. But to have her on speakerphone, she goes, hold the phone up to my dad. I'm like, okay. And I hold it up, and she's trying to make an amends on the phone, unguided, doesn't know what she's doing. You know, it's just, that's when I cried, because that could have been me. If I didn't choose this path, that could have been me throwing a Hail Mary when my dad was already unconscious, you know, that she didn't get to make her amends. And we, here in Alcoholics, is probably the greatest show on earth. All of these tools that I get to use and be able to spend that last moment with my father. I call my mom and I try to rekindle this relationship, you know, and working with all these other alcoholics. None of this stuff is my idea. It's not stuff that comes natural to me to be kind and help people even though you're broke and all. It doesn't make no sense. You know, you should go help him. I'm like, what about me? I'm on a BMX bike, bro. Come on. But that's what I did. I just did it again and again and over and over and over again. And I still do all of the same things I did my first year. I don't go to 3 meetings a day, but I still do all of the other things, the inventory. I do it all. And when I get to the 12 steps, I get to learn to work with broken branches. Because if I can't learn to work with broken branches, then I myself will never have a nest. That's all I got.